Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, cha, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee. Welcome to Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from the beautiful neighborhood of Reedville, the absolute gem of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so delighted and so very honored that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show, telling your kids' teachers, principals, librarians, telling the youth minister, telling the school crossing guard about the show, and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM FM 24/7 radio network, and they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, CastBox, Player FM, Deezer, wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Two amazing guests today. First up, Mariteri Bayas is here to celebrate Tio Ricky Doesn't Speak English. And later in the show, Meredith Rousseau is returning to celebrate when Augie learned to play chess. Before I invite our guests into the studio, we want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. Are you looking for a magical way to get your kids moving? Once Upon a Dance brings stories to life with interactive books that inspire little ones to read, move, and imagine. Award-winning and teacher-approved, these whimsical tales are perfect for classrooms, story time, or family fun. Spark joy, build confidence, and dance into imagination. Discover more at onceuponadance.com or find Once Upon a Dance books at your favorite online bookstore. We love these books. We love that they get kids off their screens and getting them moving. Check it out today, Once Upon a Dance. Join us right now from the beautiful state of California. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Tio Ricky Doesn't Speak English. Please welcome to the show, Mariteri Bayas. Hey, Mari, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you, Dad? Nice to be here with you and your audience.
I'm delighted to be with you and have you here. I think I have a niece that would say Tio Jed doesn't speak Spanish.
That would be cute. Well, you know, that is the reality of many bilingual homes is, you know, the child becomes the voice of the loved ones, especially here in the United States, but really any combination of any place where you have a majority language and the children pick it up faster than the adult. And so the relatives come to visit and they end up translated for that loved one.
Yeah. You know, you just sparked a memory in me during my beautiful wife and I had our honeymoon in Puerto Rico. And of course, at that time, I'm nowhere near bilingual. I can get by very well right now. However, at that time, it was hola, no habla español. And so my new family down in Puerto Rico, they would be very kind and they would always try to include me in conversations. But sometimes, you know, when you get going and people get excited and they're happy, sometimes they forget that the guy over there doesn't speak. He's the one out of the 20 people here that doesn't speak Spanish. And my new little cousin, Geraldine, who is 5 years old and bilingual, and she saw me and came over, and we became immediate friends. She would translate for me, make sure that I was okay. And that's been a friendship that has just been wonderful and a blessing to me.
That's amazing. So is your wife Puerto Rican?
Yes, she is. Well, I guess actually – Her parents are Puerto Rican, Corozal and Morovis.
Okay.
And officially, my wife is Puerto Rican.
Okay, from New York. Yeah. I get. Yeah. That's amazing. But you obviously went back to the island a lot and feel at home there. You know, my husband too, you know, for 40 years or so, he's been going back and he loves it there and would rather go there than to visit his family in Ohio. Also did not speak the language, even though, you know, I try to speak it with the kids and he, you know, he picked over all these years, he's picked up, you know, he understands a conversation, but he doesn't feel like he can carry a conversation. Mm-hmm. So I understand.
Yeah. Well, my first experience trying to be bilingual and right before our wedding, my beautiful wife's favorite aunt flew to Boston to kind of help out and make the copies and everything, the little gifts that you give your guests at the end of the wedding. And I wanted to impress her. And I wanted to say, how was your trip? ¿Cómo está su vieja? And instead, I said, ¿Cómo está su vieja? And I said, how was the old lady? And that was her first interaction with me. And thankfully, she was understanding. From there.
That's so funny. The memory that my husband would share with you is, you know, he wasn't my husband yet. He came for the holidays. The first time he would meet my dad, my mom had already come to California and had met him because, you know, after I graduated from Pepperdine, I had a job and I stayed. So she, you know, they figure out that I was dating someone. And I think, you know, she sent my dad sent her so she could come and meet him. Mm-hmm. So he comes to the island and where my sister goes to pick us up. And on the way from San Juan to Ponce, you know, that expressway. So yeah. We had like an hour in the car, an hour and 15 minutes or so. And she's teaching him all the bad words in Spanish. And I'm like, please do not walk in the house and say any of those bad words. So she's just having a fun time with him.
That seems to be an island-wide hobby because when one of our cousins has a boat, and so we'll oftentimes go out from Fajardo and went, I think it was Palomino Island, and throw the anchor out, and we'd be there with all these other boats. And I know what's coming. I meet new people, and they say, oh, I'm gringo. Come here. Do you want to know a Spanish word? And I'm like, okay. And this one time, they taught me this very powerful Spanish word that's popular in Puerto Rico. And they said, say it loud. And I started shouting it, and then the harbor master comes going by. Whoops. And I start shouting out to them, and they're like, whoa, because I knew exactly what they
That's funny. Yeah. My people. I love my people. And they're the greatest.
I absolutely adore Puerto Rico. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful country. The culture. That first trip down to Puerto Rico on the way home in the plane, I turned to my wife and I said, I'm coming back here to perform. I don't care if it's just for Geraldine's school. I'm coming back here to perform. And that turned into two tours a year for 10 years. And it was absolutely beautiful. I've been to, as my relatives have said, I've been to every spot on the island, and they're all beautiful. It's an incredibly diverse island. Because you can be in the north and go to El Yunque, the rainforest, and then go to the southwest and be in a dry forest.
Yep.
On the same island that you could drive around in a day.
Yeah, and then you could go up in the mountains and it's chilly up there. So, mm-hmm. But downhill, it's hot and humid.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty amazing. And the people are wonderful people, resilient to, you know, gone through all those hurricanes and all the things that have happened in the island, and we're still standing. And I think one of the best things that have happened in the century is Bad Bunny, and how he's created this, you know, he's kind of put Puerto Rico in the map everywhere, all over the world. And I so admire that. It's like, you know, I started thinking about that the other day because I was doing another interview, and they asked me, you know, so, you know, what's your goal? What's your mission? I'm like, well, I'm a little bit older than Bad Bunny, but I want to do for children's literature what he's done, you know, with for Puerto Rican children's literature, what he's done with his music, you know, with the art and all that. I just think that he is just a super smart young man and has a great team behind him that obviously must love the island too, because it shows in all the things that they create.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm pretty proud.
Well, that's a great goal. For those of you who don't know, Bad Bunny just completed a multi-month residency. Yeah. When he was performing only in Puerto Rico, a big chunk of the tickets were reserved for residents of Puerto Rico. But mm-hmm. it brought in millions and millions of dollars. And the economy right now is booming because of all that, of all the folks who came in to see those concerts. So, yes, I agree. But what a great move.
Yeah, amazing. Really amazing.
Yeah. So Tio Ricky doesn't speak English, and there's also a Spanish version available, correct?
Actually, it's the book is in English and in Spanish. So, you know, you read the English part first, and then in the same page you have the Spanish version. It's the way that the publisher is Little Libros. And Little Libros is an indie publisher that was started by two amazing, very talented Latina moms mm-hmm. over, I want to say about 11 years ago now. And they started with board books. And then, you know, little by little, they grew so much that they graduated to picture books as well. And I'm super grateful. I met them way back when. And we kind of knew that eventually we would do a project together. And so fast forward, here we are, and I'm super excited and grateful that they have given me this opportunity, and now we have a book together, and I'm ready to go on tour and, you know, do all that, all those activities that are fun and meeting new kids. I had my first event was last week, and, you know, I just love the little kids. They come and they look at the book and they get so excited, and then they tell mom and dad, oh, look, I want to be like Enrique. And so it makes it all worth it. And, you know, I didn't have these books yet when I was raising my kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't have books where the character or main character look like me or like my son or my daughter. And I have three cultures at my end because my husband is Greek, mm-hmm. Greek American. So there were really no books with Puerto Rican or Greek characters. So I'm kind of on a mission to do that, to create stories with those characters so that children from Puerto Rico or that live in the United States, but are from Puerto Rican families, and children from all over the world could, you know, can learn about this culture and appreciate our traditions and customs and all of that.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that books can be mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And, you know, I love the fact that this could have been a book that I would have read to my kids when they were little and they would have seen themselves. But I especially love that this book could serve as a window so that some of their friends could have read this book and kind of understood a little bit. I got in so much trouble, Mari, because when my son was in kindergarten, we celebrated Dia de los Reyes, the Three Kings mm-hmm. Day. And yeah. So we got the shoebox and we got the grass.
Here,
and
I love
the kids
it.
Woke up, the three kings had left them presents. And so my son, after the Christmas vacation, went back to school and he said, look what the three kings brought me for my for Three Kings Day. And I was getting these phone calls from what is three kids? I gotta get another present? What do you mean? This is awesome. Where do you find grass in the middle of wintertime?
That's so funny. Where did you find grass in the middle of winter?
We dug up some snow.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, I have an idea for a story.
Okay.
I think I have some notes already. On that same situation, you know, that all of a sudden the kids, the Puerto Rican kid is in this cul-de-sac neighborhood, you know, with other kids, and they all know about Three Kings Day, and all of a sudden there's no grass anywhere. And what happens, you know? So I've been trying to toy in with that idea to write that story, because I think, oh yeah, where are they going to go? And I'm like, okay, I have to, you know, it'll be in my head, but yeah. I just think it would be a great story.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things too, we're talking about, you know, kids, American kids being able to learn about Puerto Rican culture, and hopefully learn that Puerto Rico is part of the United States. Mm-hmm. I also love the fact that this can give kids from Mexico, from Central America, from other countries in Latin America, a chance to look in and see and learn about Puerto Rican culture, because Latin culture ain't all the same. It is a very diverse group of cultures, a very beautiful but also very diverse collection of cultures.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And this is a story about family too. And, you know, we realize reading, or the reader will be reading the book, that it's, you know, the whole idea of translating sometimes for a little kid, like when it's over and over, it's like, you know, I use some fancy words, like I use the word exhausting. So at some point, Enrique's going to tell his dad, translating for Tio Ricky is exhausting, and that chuckles, and you know they're looking out in a, they're like in a living room in one of the scenes, and they're looking out the window, and there's a tree, and there's a family of birds that obviously you can see they're helping each other. Mm-hmm. So the dad says, "See how the birds are helping each other? That's what families do." Mm-hmm. And it kind of like is an analogy for little Enrique to later on in the story, he remembers that scene, mm-hmm. and he like then realizes, oh, this is really not a chore. I'm kind of helping my uncle. Yeah. And so anyway, it's a good way of teaching without being preachy, right. But you know, just showing children that it's having, being able to communicate in two languages is a superpower, and yeah. that they are going to, you know, at some point are going to be able to be the superheroes without really wearing a cape. So mm-hmm. that was the idea of the book.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's a great lesson for every kid to learn, that, you know, when we're helping out each other, when we're helping out family, if we look at it as a blessing and a chance to help instead of it being an obligation, that makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When you were a little girl growing up in Ponce visiting Parque de Bomberos, did you know that you wanted to be a children's author?
No, but I always loved to write. My mom always reminded me that, you know, I started writing poems. I think a lot of us that are writers start writing poems. Mm-hmm. So I, in middle grade, I think I started writing poems in English and Spanish. I went to, and I think that's where my passion for languages was born, because I went to a parochial school in Ponce, Academia Cristo Rey, where the nuns came from the United States. You performed there?
I performed there.
Yeah, well, that was my school. And you, if you know, I don't know if your audience knows, but in Puerto Rico, you pretty much go to the same school. If you go to a parochial school from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. So you're with the same group of friends. I joined that that school in third grade. So from third grade to 12th grade. And the nuns didn't speak Spanish, so we kind of had to speak English. And, of course, by ninth grade, 9th, 10th, and 11th, ninth grade on, a lot of our subjects were in English. So mm-hmm. by the time you graduate from 12th grade, high school, you're completely bilingual, biliterate. You know, you learn, you read, you write, everything. And then I end up in Europe, and I was 18 years old, and all these little kids around me were speaking 4 and 5 languages. And I was like fascinated, because mm-hmm. I realized, wait, they don't only can speak, but they're being exposed to all these cultures. And that was just amazing to me. And fast forward 20 years later, I became a mom. I end up with a Greek. And I'm like, okay, these kids have to be bilingual and multicultural. I have to figure this out. And at a time where I didn't have a lot of resources yet. So I came up with, today the method is called One Parent, One Language. I did that before it was called One Parent, One Language. So, you know, it was a time where, you know, bilingualism wasn't that well seen or, you know, well known, or no one wanted to talk about it. And little by little, you know, it's, I think the scientific studies that were done, 2012, 2011, 2013, kind of all of a sudden, we all realized, wait, we should really be raising bilingual children. We're all born with a multilingual brain. Look at all the benefits and advantages. Mm-hmm. So I've been on a mission ever since, and before even online resources were available. And then, of course, you know, we have social media, so that my message was out there more because of Facebook. And then I moved to Instagram, and I've kind of become like a bilingual parenting mentor to many young Latino and non-Latino. I have a big following of non-Latino parents that understand the advantages and the benefits, and they want to raise bilingual children, even if they don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's all been, and I feel like with my books, I'm now a resource for parents, and they can go looking for those books. And, you know, I give presentations to parents. My first two books were ideas that I got from talking to parents. Mm-hmm. So
that's great. I agree. You know, my kids are like your husband. They understand a lot. They don't have the confidence. It's not that they don't have the confidence. Your husband's probably the same way. It's that they don't want to make a mistake.
Right.
And one of the great things about being almost 100, I don't care if I make a mistake.
You're not 100.
I just don't care. I don't, you know, I go and I've made lots of mistakes trying to speak Spanish. A great one, I toured El Salvador with a group called Clowns Without Borders. I was the only one in the troupe that was not fluent in Spanish, and somehow I became the MC of the show, doing all the talking. And in a rehearsal, I got up and I wanted to say, "We are Clowns Without Borders, somos payasos sin fronteras." And instead I said, "Somos payasos sin frentes." We are clowns without foreheads. And I said, "Oh my goodness, I made a mistake. I'm sorry." And they said, "Keep it." And so all throughout El Salvador, we were clowns without foreheads. And it was
that's funny.
Very, very funny. But that's the thing. You make a mistake, no big deal. You learn.
Yes. And that's what I try to teach the parents is, you know what? Don't correct the children. It all comes into play. They learn it, and we need to be consistent but flexible in that respect, and have a plan. I always tell parents, you know, I'm a planner, and I have to-do lists every night before I go to bed. I do my to-do list, what I'm doing tomorrow and the next, and you know, during the week. And so a plan is like a roadmap, and it gives you you know, the suggestions and the activities that you can use to foster and to practice the language and, you know, all that. And also involve everyone in the child's life. Everybody should be in this plan with you because you need the support as a parent. And you know, there's many resources out there these days. I just recorded a presentation that is going to air in about a month. And I said to parents, if you have any doubts, here are some stats. And if you still doubt, call me before you give up, because I will tell you, don't give up. It's really not that difficult. Yes, it is a layer of parenting that you're adding to your responsibilities, but there's so much information and education and tools and resources today that anyone should be raising a bilingual, at least one more language, you know, in addition to the majority language. Well, there is Spanish, French, German, doesn't matter, Jed, any language, I think is so wonderful for the children's future, that they're going to be able to go and find a job and be at the head of that list because they are bilingual and they can speak and write and read that other language.
And one of the things I found, because while I was touring Puerto Rico, I was on stage. My show was memorized. I was able to do some improvisation because, you know, and so I was getting there. And when I would tour Puerto Rico, I would force myself to think in Spanish. And I started looking at the world in a different way. It wasn't that one language more profound than the other, but it was just I was seeing things in a slightly different way. And that was so cool.
Yeah, I think that was the one thing that I was in awe of when I was 18 and I saw these little kids speaking all these languages and them being exposed to these cultures. I was like, wow, this is really amazing. And my kids are 33 and 35, and I say this with a lot of love in my heart and everywhere I go. They are the people that they are because of their upbringing, because of the multicultural lifestyle that we led, and because of their being bilingual. You know, we not only was a Puerto Rican, Greek, and American, but I had a group of friends that were from Mexico and from Argentina and from Peru. And so they were being exposed to all of that. And, you know, I always tell parents that first day of school or even before now, because now we can communicate with these teachers before school start, find out how many cultures are going to be in that classroom this year and try to talk to the kids about all the different cultures that the kids from the different cultures and all the things that they're going to be exposed to. And, you know, maybe help the teacher come up with cultural days for all those cultures that are represented. So the kids can be exposed to all of that. And it creates respect, compassion, inclusivity, and empathy. I mean, there's all the good things, all the values that we really would like our children to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Before I ask you to tell us where we can go to find more about Teal Ricky Doesn't Speak English, I have a challenge coming up this weekend. my dear cousin, my prima Ani was up here last week and she taught me something. And I'm going to try to do it on my own this weekend to cook my very first pot of asopal de pollo by myself.
Ooh, I love that.
Delicious recipe. It's amazing. Ani is just a magnificent chef.
So, I need that recipe, though. I make a good one, but I love to see her recipe.
All right. Well, let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Teal Ricky Doesn't Speak English and find out more about you.
About me, you can go to Instagram. I am Latina Boomer Mom on Instagram, and everywhere else is Maritere R. Bellas, and that's B-E-L-L-A-S. And the book can be, you can find the book on littlelibros.com, Amazon, and anywhere that people buy their books. It's going to be in during my book tour. It's also going to be available in indie published bookstores, which is, you know, I love supporting them. So in many in Chicago, California, in New York, everywhere, it's going to be in all those. And if anyone needs to know their specific bookstore in their town, they can always send me a DM and I will connect them.
And then our guests, our listeners can also just go into the indie bookshop and just very politely say, por favor, can you please order Teal?
Please, please request a book in your local library, your local bookstore, anywhere. That would be awesome. I would really appreciate that.
Hey, Mari, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner Lena have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work. Space camp! Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end of camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. We are really excited. Joining us once again from the beautiful Garden State of New Jersey, our guest is returning to Reading With Your Kids to celebrate when Augie learned to play chess. Please welcome back to the show, Meredith Rousseau. Meredith, how are you?
Well, thanks. I'm so happy to be back and talk about my new book. I'm really excited to be able to share it with you.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Augie caught my eye because Augie was the name of a very grumpy beagle who was part of our family for about 13 to 14 years. And he definitely would never have learned how to play chess. He just didn't have the temperament.
This book was written, inspired by and written in honor of my father-in-law, Augustine. And it's funny, when I came up with the name for the main character in the book, my husband and mother-in-law were like, Augie. And I'm like, yeah, did he ever go by Augie? They're like, nope, not once in his life.
And he would have been quite upset if
Hopefully not. No, I think he would have understood.
Now let's talk about who is Augie.
Okay, so this story is about 7-year-old Augie, who is new to school in a new town. They've moved, him and his dad have moved from a beachside community, and he doesn't have any friends. The entire environment looks different to him, and he misses his old life. He misses his old friends in school, and he feels very small and unimportant in his new school, and he just wants to go back home, he keeps telling his dad, but his dad says, this is your new home. And his dad convinces him to play a game of chess with him, using a board that Augie found in his dad's office that belonged to his grandfather, which in Romanian, the word for grandfather is bunicu. And the word for father is tata, so he calls his dad tata. And they start playing chess, and he starts gaining confidence through learning how to play chess from his dad. And he's slowly learning how, he doesn't realize it, but he's learning lessons about being patient and about having courage and, connecting with other kids at school while he's playing chess with his dad. And so by the end of the story, Augie notices a chessboard in the classroom, and that gives him the courage to ask another child to play with him and make his first friend at school.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, chess is, as we're talking here, chess is one of those games that I think really encourages conversation.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of backstory about how the book came to be, which I can probably share in a little bit.
Sure.
But my sons, who are now 8 and 10, but when they first started playing, they were 3 and 5. And they have made so many friends through playing chess. They've played at tournaments and they played in classes, but they helped me start a chess club at their school because of that connection. They wanted to play with each other and they wanted to play with their friends. And there are a lot of kids who love chess. There are a lot of kids who love chess.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that chess is one of those things that encourages kids to spend less time on their screens. Although I guess a lot of kids are playing chess on their screens.
I was going to say my older son, when he was 5, he did learn from playing one of those online computer programs, because when he learned, it was COVID. So we spent a lot of time indoors playing chess together and then playing on the on the iPad.
Yeah. Chess is what I taught my son how to play again, when he was 4 or 5 years old. It's amazing. A lot of people would think 5-year-old playing chess, but it's a game that they pick up really quick.
So that's part of how I got the whole inspiration for the book. So just a little background. My father-in-law, both my in-laws were originally from Romania, and chess was big over there. When my father-in-law was growing up, he grew up on a family farm. He played with all his siblings in the 50s and 60s. And then he emigrated to the defected to the United States, from communist Romania in the early 1970s. It's an awesome story. He snuck out on foot and needed to stay in a refugee camp in Italy for a year before he could decide which country he was going to. And he and his brother picked the U.S. And when he got here, he eventually started working in New York City at a financial firm. But he needed to connect with other people. He was still learning the language and he didn't know anyone. He had no family and no friends. And he found that everyone played chess on their lunch breaks outside in the parks, just like searching for Bobby Fischer. And so he was able to connect with his coworkers by playing chess with them on their lunch breaks. And so fast forward to right around COVID time, my father-in-law unfortunately learned that he was ill, not with COVID, but with cancer. And he was adamant. He says, "I want the boys," meaning our sons, Matthew and Luke, "to learn how to play chess." And I played as a kid, but I just always got crushed by my brother and my dad. I was never very good. So I'm like, all right, yeah, you know, that sounds fine if they like it. And I didn't think that they were 3 and 5. So this goes back to your original point, young kids. I didn't think they were going to be able to learn. They're just going to like make the pieces battle on the board. Uh-huh. Matthew picked up on it like instantaneously. It was like you could see his mind working out the puzzles and what to do. And he started playing right away with Buniku, with his grandpa. And we have so many incredible memories over the chessboard that whole year while my father-in-law was sick, pictures and videos of them just playing together and bonding and just knowing that while Matthew was learning all the techniques, I didn't even realize that, like, you know, when my father-in-law was teaching him about gambits, he was actually teaching him how to take risks, have the confidence to take risks. He was teaching him patience. Matthew's not a patient kid. And he was teaching him to think things through and look 4 moves or 5 moves or 8 moves forward before reacting. And it was just such a very special memory for us personally. And I just was amazed how Matthew was able to pick up on it so young. And then Luke followed suit. Like, you know, the next year when he was 4, we have pictures of them playing together too. And now they both play. So when I wrote this book, my editor, Ann Schwartz, she's so lovely. And she's like, what about, because I was discussing various ways to approach the story with her. And she said, what about a story about a father teaching his son chess? And I'm like, that makes so much sense because it's not just about the game. It's about the legacy and the lessons that can be shared over the board that the kids then use and translate into their actual little lives, but in very real ways. I hoped that it would resonate with young readers, young picture book readers, because that's the exact age that learning to play chess wound up really influencing our sons.
What a beautiful, beautiful memory. And this is a weird coincidence, Meredith. You're talking about your father-in-law spending time in a refugee camp. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be wearing my Clowns Without Borders t-shirt. And Clowns Without Borders is an organization I belong to when we send clowns to refugee camps and disaster areas all over the world.
That's wonderful. I wasn't familiar with that. That's awesome. I'll have to read more. That's cool.
Yeah. We have a chapter here in the United States, and I think there's one in England, in Sweden. It's an international organization, and I'm proud to be a member of it. And I love that story, that I really have, in the last few years, really come to love stories that celebrate intergenerational friendships, mm-hmm. like the ones between your father-in-law and your kids. I think those friendships can be so valuable to the kids, but also to the older person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I wish so much that my father-in-law could see how much the boys have grown. I know I saw how much joy it brought him during what was a very challenging period, like, you know, of medical treatment. But that was, it was an escape for him. It kept, you know, it's like they say staying young at heart, but like, you know, you feel like a kid again. And he was seeing them learn things for the first time, but like reliving that himself. It's one of our most treasured memories. I'm extraordinarily grateful for it.
Yeah. What do you kids think about when Augie learned to play chess? Do they realize it's kind of about them?
Oh, they know. Yeah. Matthew is at an age now. Both of them are, but Matthew's at an age where he will give me editorial feedback on my stories now quite often.
Oh, that must be interesting.
When I'm writing books, and so he's actually older than because he's 10 now, so he's older than the picture books, right? But he won't hold back. He'll be like, yeah, it's not your best. But not for, no, Augie, they love. One of the things I just have to mention about the book too, that it really brings it enraptures the kids, as it were. The illustrator that they found for it, his name is Stephen Costanza. He's an award-winning illustrator of picture books. He brought this to life in such a just beautiful, gorgeous illustrated way. It's cool because the illustrations almost, I've got the book here. And they're layered and painterly with all the different details that he kind of put in there for you to kind of see and find. But he also used this color palette that to me reminded me of like the 70s, almost like the oranges and the browns and the greens. And I'm like, what a really cool homage to my father-in-law, who the book is based on. But then when the kids are going through, they're just like enthralled looking through everything there is to see in the illustrations. They're so beautiful. I couldn't have imagined it coming out better. And they loved the book. My kids loved the book. My nieces and nephews, there's no better feeling than when you give a kid the picture book for the first time and you see them really reading it and focusing and going page by page slowly. That's pretty cool.
That is very, very cool. Well, you must have had that experience lots of times. I noticed on your website that you've written over 100 books.
Yeah. it's actually more than well over 200 at this point. I kind of stopped counting. I'm a licensed author by trade. So over my career, I've done mostly books against children's toys and television and movies, but now I have a lot more original work coming out. And so, I have a picture book series called Mighty Moods Picture Book Series that I've had the wonderful opportunity to talk with you about on previous episodes. And now with Augie, and then for future books I have coming out, it's so cool to be able to work with different illustrators and see the nuance and the personality they're able to bring. It's mind blowing because I'm good with the words, but the art is just something that I could never hope to have that amount of talent.
Oftentimes I'll ask an author if it's difficult for them to let go of a project and allow an illustrator to tell part of the story. I'd like to ask you, and you don't have to name the book if there is one, has there ever been an experience where an illustrator has illustrated the book and the publisher said, yep, it's ready, it's going out, and you're kind of sitting back going, yeah, I'm not sure about those illustrations?
Never, not for any of my original work, no. Knock on wood, I've been very fortunate. It's with the licensed stuff, it's just such a different experience because the license exists. So, you know, the characters like from the TV or from the toys and the way that they're going to look. there's definitely been times when I haven't connected with the artwork in the books. And I'm like, it's not one that I'd necessarily be giving as a Christmas present. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, each person, each editor has their own vision. That's their job to envision it the way that they want and execute that. And, you know, in a case of a licensed book where I'm being hired to write the story for them for a specific need, I have to be able to let that go. That's not, it's not my place to be like, oh, I don't like that artwork. Well, it's not.
Actually, no one asked you, Meredith.
Wait, I'm sorry.
I said, actually, no one asked you, Meredith.
Yeah, exactly.
What is the, you know, we have a lot of aspiring, a lot of authors and aspiring authors who listen to the show. What do you find is the biggest difference between writing an original book, something that you came up with, and writing, being a hired gun when an editor or a company comes in and says, hey, I want you to write this story about these Legos or this Lego character.
Right. It is fascinating how long the process takes between how the difference in time between a licensed title and between the original work. I think that was the biggest shock and adjustment for me. Licensed publishing moves rapidly. So if something comes out, like, I mean, I haven't looked to see what the pub program is for K-pop Demon Hunters, but I'm sure there's like 10 billion books already in the works. And you can get a book acquired, licensed, like, you know, the editor can, and have it going to print within like 6 months. You can do it shorter. It just depends on what the assets are. I sold When Augie Learned to Play Chess back in 2021, 22. Mm-hmm. And we're in 2025. Mm-hmm. It takes a long, long time, especially for a picture book, to go from initial manuscript being accepted to being published. And it's also weird when, you know, in licensed stuff, you're told I need an 8x8 within these parameters telling this story. You submit it. Usually there's some small changes unless there's something really wrong. And then it goes off on its merry way. With the original work, it can go through rounds and rounds and rounds of edits with multiple different editors at multiple different houses with no guarantee that it'll ever see the light of day.
Yeah, I was blown away. We had a publisher here, I think the first or second year of Reading With Your Kids, a small, wonderful publishing house, Familius. And the owner of Familius came on the show and he was telling me, and I was literally knocked on the floor when he said, yeah, it can take 3 to 4 years from the time we purchase a manuscript till the time it hits the shelves. And I'm like, I don't understand this.
It hasn't been announced yet. But I sold another picture book manuscript that I'm eager for the announcement to be made, but it's not slated until like 2028. That's mind blowing to me because so much of my inspiration comes from the here and now. And so it is strange, even with something like Augie, to remember when I originally wrote it and where my sons were at that, like in their lives, and now where they are. But the book about that snapshot from back then is finally coming out.
Yeah.
But I also like to think about it. The book, even though it's mine, it's now for the world. So it's people to read and enjoy and, you know, hopefully like embrace and apply to their own lives where they are now, however old their kids are, or if they've even got babies or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. You know, you and I were joking before we hit record about me not remembering all 2,200 guests that have been on Reading With Your Kids. Have you ever had an experience where you're out somewhere, maybe at a book signing or at a school visit, and a kid comes up to you and says, I really like this book that you read, that you wrote, and he names the title, and you're like, great. I don't remember writing that book, but...
I haven't had that with kids coming up because they usually like the really popular ones. Okay. But there will be times when I get author copies of all my books. And so they're all downstairs in the basement, just like stacked on shelves. And there will be times when I go down into the basement to grab something for like a birthday party or something. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did write that book. I really don't remember writing some of the ones from far back. And I'll even like when I'm reading through it, I'm like, did I write this, but did they change it? Because I don't have any recollection of writing it. But you know, I mean, as the career gets longer, that's just par for the course.
Did you have any idea when you set out to become a children's author that one day you'd be sitting here saying, yeah, I've written over 200 books?
I don't think so. You know, it's funny. It's always like that. You know, there's always, what's that lyric? There's always another mountain that you want to climb. I remember when my very first licensed title was published, and we're going back 15 years now. 17. And it was like a board book. And I was so proud of it. And I was showing all my relatives. I'm like, look, there's my little name. And, you know, I think I can't even remember if I was posting about it because Facebook was around, but we're talking about pre-Instagram, pre-TikTok, pre all of that. And now, you know, a board book is just another, you know, I like writing them. I like getting hired to write them, but it's just another thing on a title on a spreadsheet. So then when I was submitting my first picture book manuscript through my agent, I was like, I just want to get one original manuscript published and then I will be happy. Then I can die happy. Uh-huh. You get the one and you're like, oh, well now I want more. Uh-huh. And so there's always a desire to keep things growing, but you know, I also am obviously very proud of each original story because I know how much went into it in order for it to see the light of day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you have a little bit of catching up to do. We've had Jane Yolen on the podcast in the past, and she has over 400 traditionally published books.
Oh my gosh. Yep. That's a little to catch up.
No, you got a little bit to go, but I'm confident and hopefully we'll be here to have you back on to celebrate book number 400 or 500.
I will be here and ready and waiting for that call.
Let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about when Augie learned to play chess.
Sure. So you can follow me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @MeredithRusuWrites. And I've got all the different posts I've got upcoming events in locally within New Jersey. I'm doing several book festivals, the Morristown Festival of Books in October. I have my book launch at the New Providence Memorial Library. I don't know if this will air before or after, but that's in September 15th. So on Instagram, I've got a lot of stuff posted. I also have my website, which is just MeredithRusuWrites.com. And that has links to some fun stuff, like, you know, different downloads for my books, like, you know, coloring and activity pages and book trailers. And on the publisher websites too, but those are the two best places to see what I've got going on and anywhere that I might be.
Awesome. And, of course, we always encourage folks to go to their local independent bookstore and politely ask if when Augie Learned to Play Chess is available. And if they say no, you just say, well, I know you're nice enough to order it for me, please.
Yes, bookstore, library, tell everyone, tell the world.
Yes. We had a great time speaking to the author of When Augie Learned to Play Chess. Our guest has been Meredith Rousseau. Meredith, thanks so much for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading with Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. In the meantime, please be sure to connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, @readingwithyourkids on Instagram, and @JedlyMagic on X. We have a great YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. And of course, our website, it's readingwithyourkids.com. If you are the author of a fantastic children's book, please be sure to visit readingwithyourkids.com and click the author's Click Here button up at the top of the page. Find out how you can be a guest here on the show. It's fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of people about your fantastic children's book. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our wonderful guest, Marta Teddy. Bayes. Please be sure to check out T.O. Ricky Doesn't Speak English. And Meredith Rousseau. Please be sure to check out When Augie Learned to Play Chess. I want to thank our fantastic sponsors, onceuponadance.com and Be Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. My team, I think they deserve a big shout out, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And of course, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place. And you do that every single time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.